Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast. Presented by Allied Home Security.
In the air to right center field. Back at the track. It is off the wall. In to score is Bregman, and the Astros strike first in game six. First and third, one out here in the seventh. Runner going, struck him out, throw down, got him, double play! And the inning is over. Tucker hits it in the air to left. Back at the wall, gone! Home run! 5-0 Houston in the eighth. Here comes the 0-1. Fly ball into left. That should do it. Astros win the pennant.
Third time in 5 years, the Astros headed back to the World Series. If it's an odd-numbered year, book it. They're going to the World Series. They'll be facing the Atlanta Braves. Game one tomorrow night, Minute Maid Park. Friday was one of those moments that we don't get that often as a sports fan, but one of those moments where you can just sit back for a few days and savor greatness. The Houston Astros on their way to the fourth World Series in franchise history as we welcome you in on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light, Sean Pendergast, and Seth Payne. Seth, it is despite the 31-5 score of the Texans game yesterday, it is a great day to be a Houston sports fan.
Oh, it feels so good. It's for where we were, I'd say midway through the 2020 baseball season, the truncated COVID-shortened season where it looked like the Astros were just exhausted, forlorn. Maybe their window had closed. Who knows? Because what's going to happen with all these guys anyway to what they went on to do in that postseason and then this entire season and this entire postseason so far? It just it feels like it balances out the universe, Sean. I don't think I'm being overly dramatic about that, because baseball, unlike any other sport, completely dominates your life for 6 months out of the year.
Yes,
and there's something about extending it on into October, November over the last 5 years, starting with Hurricane Harvey, where it just feels like your autumn isn't complete without the Astros making a deep playoff run.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that, because I was a lot of thoughts going through my head on Friday as I'm watching the celebration. I'm watching what appears to be old hat, which is guys like Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve, Carlos Correa, sitting there at the dais, sitting there at the desk there with the Fox guys, with Big Poppy and with A-Rod, and chopping it up about the ALCS and going to the World Series. And I'm thinking to myself, this must be what it felt like to watch the Yankees back in the late 90s and the early part of the 2000s and not be a Yankee fan. If you're someone who is not a fan of the Astros, and right now, because of what happened a couple of years ago, pretty much everybody who's not an Astros fan is anti-Astros. They're not apathetic about the Astros. You either love the Astros or you hate the Astros because of the being better than everybody scandal back in 2017.
Good usage.
Thank you. But this is the closest thing that baseball has had to those late 90s Yankees teams. I mean, we're talking about a team that's gone to five straight ALCSs. Only one other team's ever done that. And we're talking about a team now that's back in its third World Series in 5 years with, by and large, a different group of guys than got there in 2017. But the key part is the same real small core group of guys that's been the scourge of everybody in the baseball world. That had this has to be what that felt like for people, what I felt watching the Yankees back then, which is, oh my God, these guys again, they never go away. Anytime they need a big hit, they get a big hit. They are just, they must be the most fun team to root for because they come up big so often. And that's this Astros team, man. From the time Jose Altuve hit that home run in game four in the eighth inning, they outscored the Red Sox 21-1. 21-1.
Yeah. It's absurd, Sean. And I think especially if you look at how good Yordan was and how key and clutch he was in this series, you don't even realize that Yuli cruised his way to like really an all-time pitching performance or all-time hitting performance.
It was
in a playoff
the quietest
series.
455 series I've ever seen in my life. Like, wait,
it's
what?
Nuts.
Yeah,
it's just absolutely nuts. Well, we're, you know, Yuli during the regular season over the past couple of years, it's you know, there's those moments with Yuli where you think of, okay, he's hitting 500 with bases loaded and whatnot. It wasn't his turn to have the big hero clutch moments in this series, but okay, it was Altuve's turn. Yeah. And it was Yordan's turn, and that, and I, Joe Buck and John Smoltz, I can't remember which game it was, but it was as the Astros were pouring it on, they kind of commented in the seventh inning, like, boy, if I were to tell you that the top three guys for the Astros weren't doing well, you never would have expected this. I'm like, what the hell are you guys talking about?
We've been watching all year. Yes. We've got like seven great hitters.
This happens a lot with the Astros, right? When you get down to your seventh and eighth guys that you still feel like you have a whole bunch of life, then there you have it. And then, oh, boy. Sean, I try not to gloat because it's unbecoming. People don't want to hear it. But Maldonado. Look, Maldonado with that pickoff at second was one of the most exuberant moments I've experienced in sports, I think.
Yes.
It was for like a non-game clinching moment, not in the final moments of a game or something. That was just like, it was the perfect illustration of, okay, yes, you need a little bit more out of Maldonado at the plate, but let's not pretend that Jason Castro starting is no big deal and you don't lose anything defensively. Yeah. It's a conundrum that you're in right now. Oh, the only thing I'd say, and I sent you the stats, Sean, I love Castro as a pinch hitter, and he's much better as a pinch hitter than he is at the plate as a starting catcher.
Mm-hmm.
He focuses on it. He studies the relievers. He keeps himself in the game. It's a whole different deal when you ask a guy to be the starting catcher and also hit. He's not going to be as productive in that role, you know? So I think they've got the perfect blend right now using him as a pinch hitter.
Yeah. There were so many moments in this series. And I think I tweeted this after the game. I think the two guys in game six that you got to give credit to, obviously you mentioned Yordan Alvarez and then Luis Garcia, the fact that if I'm the Braves, cause that's the only team that matters right now, the rest of baseball doesn't matter anymore. The only team that matters being nervous facing the Astros is the Braves. I think the thing that would make me most nervous if I'm a Braves fan or if I'm one of the Atlanta Braves, and make no mistake, they're on quite the roll. I don't know that they're nervous about anything as the Astros are. I think the Astros, these are two very confident teams heading into the World Series. But the fact that it seems like the top of the rotation has gotten things straightened out, even without Lance McCullers, you got two great, not good, great performances from Framber Valdez and from Luis Garcia. And Yordan Alvarez is activated, man. He is dialed in. And that's what game five and six boiled down to, Seth. I know the pitching was great. The bullpen was great. These last two games basically, in my mind, boiled down to the Astros have Yordan Alvarez on their team and the Red Sox don't. He had seven hits in two games. If Yordan Alvarez isn't on the Astros, we're talking about two games that are complete dogfights and could go the other way. But he was as deserved an MVP and an ALCS as I've ever seen. He was incredible.
It's going to be a fun series with the with Atlanta.
Yeah,
and at least partly because like Atlanta's almost completely the opposite of Houston in terms of the way they've conducted their business. They have starters who pitch a bunch of innings and see a bunch of batters, and then they've got the same three relievers that they send in every single game. They've had much more stability with their pitching than the Astros had. Now I guess I expect the Astros to have stability with their pitching in terms of who rolls out there. It's just a matter of you know, exactly how good are those guys? Urquidy's the big question mark. I just, the only thing I'm still nervous about is, okay, we've seen very little of Urquidy in this series, in this postseason. And when we saw him, he couldn't find the strike zone. From a guy that used to be, is usually very, very, very good at throwing strikes, he couldn't find the strike zone. So that's my one bit of trepidation headed into this series.
All right. So we're going to talk plenty over the next 2 days. We'll be hardcore previewing Atlanta tomorrow. For now, this is the first time we've had a chance to really relive Friday. And I know a lot of you have been waiting over the weekend to relive it with us here. And we will do that throughout the morning. I would imagine throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610. We will be doing that. In fact, we barely touched on Luis Garcia and the pitching here. Some of my favorite numbers as we go back through the recap of the Astros winning three straight to beat the Red Sox in six. I've got four of my favorite numbers from this series that I think epitomize everything that this Astros team is about. That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610, brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, so the Astros are on their way to the World Series. We'll hit the Deshaun Watson.
Wait, what?
At the bottom of the hour. I don't know if you heard, Seth. They're on their way to the World Series. They don't even have to go. Very far. They just have to drive across town for Game 1. It's at Minute Maid Park, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, that was I kept reminding myself of that because there was the part of me that really wanted to see the Dodgers, especially as banged up as they were. But that I kept reminding myself, oh, yeah, home field advantage. And I know, remind yourself of this too, Seth, 2019 was an aberration. That's not the norm when you just flat out don't win games.
When the home team loses every game of the World Series.
It's okay to want home field advantage for the World Series, yeah.
By the time that NLCS was over, though, you're right. Like by the time we were midway through Game 6 of that series on Saturday night, the only reason I wanted the Braves to win was for home field advantage. At that point, the Dodgers were so banged up, they were not nearly as scary. I mean, Max Scherzer had a dead arm. Like we're talking about a team like Clayton Kershaw is not pitching anymore. Trevor Bauer is in trouble. Max Scherzer has a dead arm. They were not as frightening as they would normally be at full strength. So
did you see the movie There Will Be Blood?
Once a while. That was the Drink the Milkshake movie, right? Daniel Day-Lewis.
Yeah. He's the oil baron who has this kind of running feud with a preacher. The big thing is, spoiler alert here, everybody who hasn't seen this movie that's been out for 14 years. Basically, his foe comes to see him at the end, and Daniel Day-Lewis's foe is he's in rough shape. Like, he's desperate, and he's asking for help from Daniel Day-Lewis. And Daniel Day-Lewis basically bashes this dude's brains in with was either a bowling pin, a bowling ball, or both, whatever it might be.
Some apparatus.
And I felt like that might have been what the Astros could do to the Dodgers
in
the World Series.
That...
It would have felt good.
Yeah.
It would have felt all right.
That
would
have been fun.
But nevertheless, so instead we go to the team that drafted Dusty Baker,
mm-hmm.
a team that's been honoring Hank Aaron, one of Dusty Baker's good friend all year long.
Yeah.
And not nearly as much animosity, which is going to be kind of refreshing, honestly.
Well, I mean, there is a long history with these two teams in the postseason back from when the Astros were in the National League. We'll dig more into that tomorrow. But, Seth,
but no clear and present animosity.
Right,
the
right.
Way, the you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah,
not where like you've been despising them lately.
It's a generation ago when the animosity was at a fever pitch between these two teams. So just to go back through this Red Sox series, there are so many turning points and different aspects of this series. For a series where there was on the scoreboard at the end of the game only one close game in the whole series, the only close game in the series was game one that the Astros won 5-4. Other than that, it was 9-5, 12-3, 9-2, 9-1, 5-0. For a series where the next closest game other than game one was a 4-run win for the Red Sox, there were a lot of really interesting chess moves and twists and turns in this series. And there's a couple of them that I think are relevant here that are my favorite ones. The one I talked about in the open, Jose Altuve's home run in Game 4 to tie the series at 2, might have been in a series that had a lot of big plays and a lot of big forks in the road. That, to me, was the one that did really turn this series. That was when the Astros started to feel like the Astros again. Big hit by Altuve, ties the game. They go on to win in the next inning, in the ninth inning. And they go on to explode in the ninth inning behind all kinds of big two-out hits. 21-1, the Astros outscored the Red Sox after that Altuve home run in Game 4. I love that stat right there. That was a big turning point.
Altuve in that moment, it was him the other night making it home really aggressively. There were Carlos Correa after that moment though, it was interesting. Carlos Correa didn't have a great series for the rest of the way through.
He had one RBI. His only RBI in the whole series was the look at my wristwatch home run in game one.
Right. Yeah. It was funny that the wristwatch moment kind of sparked something in the Astros fan base with the rally nuns with everybody else.
Yeah.
But it didn't actually work all that well for Carlos Correa.
No. However, it did, from this standpoint, it did bait Eduardo Rodriguez into doing the wristwatch taunting of Carlos Correa, after which, if we remember, that was coming out of the sixth inning, the top of the sixth inning, end of the top of the sixth in game three. Eduardo Rodriguez taunts Carlos Correa with the wristwatch celebration. Alex Cora goes nuts on his pitcher saying, "What the hell are you doing? Do you not watch Ryan Tepera poke the bear in the previous series?" And he poked the bear. From that point on, the Astros outscored the Red Sox 23-6 after that taunting. And in games 4, 5, and 6, the Red Sox were 0-19 with runners in scoring position. 0-19 with runners in scoring position.
0-19 with runners in scoring position. And the notable thing about that, too, is that, you know, I think at times the Astros fans believe, like, that the Astros are horrible with runners in scoring position, where they're not this year. It's just that they've got runners in scoring position so often that it feels like they're stranding them all the time.
Yeah.
They do tend to knock them in at a pretty good clip. I was a little bit torn on Cora not thinking Rodriguez should have done that, just because I felt like Cora in almost expressing that publicly, it shows a little bit of weakness. I don't want my team to be afraid of poking the bear.
Yeah.
Was Carlos Correa afraid of poking the bear when he was pointing at his wristwatch?
No.
Of course he wasn't.
Correa said he liked that Rodriguez did it. Correa said he thinks the game needs more juice like that. He didn't mind at all.
I found a lot of reasons to hate Cora during this series.
Hmm.
And I don't know what it was. There was something about it that just started to grate me the wrong way. And I enjoyed the fact that I felt like Eovaldi was relatively totally mismanaged in this series.
Yeah.
He got himself out of a pinch on Friday night, but he only pitched 4 1/3 innings because he'd been used in relief in a blowout loss.
Yeah, well, and they made it, boy, the announcers made it sound like his 4 1/3 innings was like Jack Morris going 10 innings back in 1991.
Oh,
what a heroic performance from Nathan Eovaldi. I'm like, he pitched 4 1/3, and he's leaving behind in the game. Like, what are you talking
about? And with no, I mean, Smoltz kind of alluded to it at times, but basically they used him as a reliever when there was no need to use him as a reliever.
Right.
That's where I'm talking about Cora. I think, Cora,
Felt a little too big for the moment for him in some respects.
Here's another number that I really like, kind of playing into the opposite of what we just talked about with the Red Sox. 0-19 with runners in scoring position. The Astros in the postseason have 44 two-out RBIs in the postseason. That's more than any team in Major League Baseball history before a World Series. 44 two-out RBI. Seth, their OPS as a team with two outs in the postseason is is 1,018, 1.018. It's 1,018. Their OPS during the regular season, the Astros with two outs, was 728.
Yeah,
which is good enough for seventh in the league, like pretty good. In the postseason, they are basically hitting like an MVP. Like they are a collective nine-headed MVP caliber player with two outs in this postseason. They've been tremendous in the postseason with runners on bases. You're 44 two-out RBIs. That's got to be the most frustrating thing if you're an opposing fan. It's like third down in football. Like you can't get off the field.
Sean, that puts them at that 1.08 OPS for illustration's sake. That puts them at Lou Gehrig's career level.
There you go.
OPS. So in this series, you had Lou Gehrig batting pretty much everywhere in the lineup whenever there were two outs. It was like you had a special Lou Gehrig pinch hitter, where whenever there were two outs, Lou Gehrig would come in and just keep taking swings at the plate.
McCormick would turn into Lou Gehrig right on the spot.
Yeah, third best. So the Astros had the third best OPS player of all time whenever there were two outs in that.
That's
series.
A great way to put it. That's an easy way to put it. That's how great they were in the postseason. It's not just this series. This is going back to the White Sox series as well. Last one, the bullpen. In the four wins in this series, the bullpen pitched 18 and a third innings, gave up one run, and it was Presley's home run in game one that cut the lead from 5-3 to 5-4. So other than that home run, which wound up being inconsequential in this series, they shut the Red Sox out. The entire bullpen, this bullpen that was so maligned at times this year, including late in the season, had a 0.49 ERA in this series in the four wins. In the four wins, they were lights out. And if you want to add the Game 4 win against the White Sox to the mix, 0.39 ERA in the last five wins for the bullpen.
This reminded me, Sean, that I applaud all of us, the Astros fan base, talk radio host, everybody, for never questioning James Click's additions at the trade deadline.
Never.
We never were like totally gung-ho all about it for 2 weeks and then really seriously started to question whether James Click had just bought high on a bunch of lemons. Never once did any of us do that.
It was a good series for Click when it comes to his pickups at the deadline. There's no doubt
really,
about that.
Yeah, this year much more so than last year. You feel like, okay, this is very much James Click's baseball team.
Yes.
Like, if Jeff Luhnow were the GM, he would have made different decisions, different ways, maybe better, maybe worse, but it would have diverged very greatly. Where last year it felt like James Click was just kind of riding the momentum on into the postseason. This year, some of his substantive changes, for better and for worse, have had a huge imprint on this series.
Other than the Astros in the World Series, the biggest story over the next 9 days, 8 days here in Houston is going to be the Deshaun Watson trade rumors. We're going to tell you everything you need to know for this week that's coming up, including a second team that emerged yesterday while its quarterback was benched. We will get to that next. Stay there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's a Reaction Monday from the Twin Peaks Studios on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Keeping Texas chill. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, we'll circle back to the Astros and the latest with Lance McCullers. Could he be part of this pitching staff for the World Series? James Click and Dusty Baker both talked about that. We'll get to that in about 10 minutes here. Just to mix in a little Texans talk, not much to rehash with the game yesterday. They lose 31-5. That's probably the most compelling thing about the game is, for the first time ever, the final score of an NFL game was 31-5. Beyond that, this is a team that looks completely overwhelmed, at least on the road. They've been outscored 102-8 in their last 3 road games with Davis Mills as the starter. The biggest story with the Texans over the next 8 days is going to be, does something happen with Deshaun Watson? Here was Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network before yesterday's games, yesterday morning on the NFL Network, talking about the latest with the interest, not just with the Dolphins, but around the league with Deshaun Watson.
Based on everything I have heard, the hope, the belief, the expectation is something will happen involving a trade and Deshaun Watson before November 2nd. There's been plenty of false starts. There's been plenty of rumors around this. So take this for what it is. But the expectation is something will be completed by November 2nd. Here's where it stands. Multiple teams are still interested in trading for Deshaun Watson. I know there was a report earlier in the week about the Dolphins. They are not alone. Among the teams that have been discussed over the past several months, the Panthers, the Broncos, the Eagles, and some others. His legal situation is still, as of right now, unsettled. Still, of course, the civil and criminal allegations of sexual misconduct. I'm told there are still teams interested in trading for him, despite the fact that this is still unsettled. Watson also has a no-trade clause. The belief is he would waive it for Miami. Unclear as of now what he would do for the others.
Okay, so that's Ian Rapoport. Seth, I have a theory on why I think maybe one or two of these teams might have really acute interest in acquiring Deshaun Watson, but we should mention the Panthers part of this. That was from before yesterday's games, and the reports are now, we know the Dolphins are really interested in Deshaun Watson. That we know. We know the Panthers were interested in Deshaun before the lawsuit started flying, and then they traded a second, a fourth, and a sixth for Sam Darnold. That is not working out at all. It worked out for a few games when they started out 3-0. Now they're 3-4. Sam Darnold is a big reason why they've lost 4 games in a row. He got benched yesterday in the middle of a 25-3 loss to the New York Giants, of all teams.
Yeah, the Giants just throttled the Panthers.
Destroyed them yesterday. Absolutely destroyed them. Sam Darnold got benched for P.J. Walker. And now the reports are out of Carolina. The Carolina may be just as interested and urgent as the Dolphins would be in getting a Deshaun Watson trade done. I guess the question becomes, if you're Deshaun Watson, he's got the no trade clause. We know he would waive the no trade clause to go to the Dolphins. Would he waive the no trade clause to go to the Carolina Panthers? If you were Deshaun Watson, would you waive the no trade clause to go to the Carolina Panthers, Seth?
That's not a game I like to play. Like, what if I were Deshaun Watson?
Just in this instance, let's compartmentalize.
If I were Deshaun Watson, this is how I would be different than apparently Deshaun Watson is right this moment. I would care more about the football organization than the lifestyle, perhaps. I don't know what it's hard for me to look at the Miami Dolphins as constructed and the way they've operated in the last couple of years and think that they actually know what the hell they're doing, or that I'm going to make that team substantially better. Whereas with Carolina, I think there's a lot that, in terms of roster, in terms of ownership, in terms of coaching, I just would feel like there's a lot more upside to that. So I don't know why he would shirk the Panthers over the Dolphins, but that's, according to John McClain and other reports, that's what he's doing right now. McClain, when all this Panthers news came out yesterday, McClain tweeted something to the effect of, people forget that Deshaun's got a no trade clause. And yeah, and he's basically only allowed the Texans to negotiate with the Dolphins as we understand it right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so if the Panthers are more urgent about this, I will say this as far as geography goes, that yeah, Miami, if you're into the nightlife and that lifestyle, Miami is, you know, Miami greater than Charlotte. But Charlotte is, I mean, I don't know how many people have looked at a map and seen how close Charlotte is to Atlanta. It is very close to Atlanta, which is, you know, if Deshaun has a home market, it's Atlanta. He's from Gainesville, Georgia. But Gainesville is on the Charlotte side of Atlanta. Yeah. It's probably about a half hour or 40 minutes outside of Atlanta to the side of Charlotte. And Amy and I drove from North Carolina, from Charlotte to Atlanta this summer. It's only a few hours away. Driving down the highway. So Charlotte, and obviously Charlotte is very close to Clemson, where Deshaun is, I would imagine, even with all the lawsuits flying, Deshaun Watson is probably still revered in South Carolina for bringing that national championship to Clemson. So I'm with you. I think Carolina's a better organization. I think the Dolphins are a mess. They're going to be a bigger mess after they gut their next three drafts to trade for Deshaun Watson. I guess at this point, Seth, based on just what the normal news cycle has been with all these trade rumors, along with the fact that there is a deadline to get a deal done, what are you feeling right now as far as the percentage chance or the what's your optimism level of a deal?
I'm not optimistic at all. Like, not one bit of me. And I've talked to people that whole game. I've talked to people who are way more confident than I am based on I think that based on the confidence of the organization that this is going to get done.
Mm-hmm.
And that two things have to happen for you to report that something will happen. One is you have to believe that, you know, the organization is telling you the truth. And two is you have to believe that the organization knows what the hell they're talking about. And if somebody from the Texans were to tell me, oh, yeah, this thing that we want to do, that we want to pull off, that's going to be really, really tricky to pull off, we're going to do that. Yep, this is the organization that's going to pull off that really tricky, weird thing. Like, no, I don't know. I've been watching the Texans botch major thing after major thing after major thing for long enough that I don't trust that the Texans are going to be able to pull off this most improbable of NFL trades of a man who is currently facing 24 allegations of sexual assault.
Yeah, I'm terrified right now. I'm terrified right now because if the confidence level that's being reported out there that a trade is getting done by the trade deadline, it means one of two things. It means either the Dolphins are pushing all these chips to the middle of the table and the Texans are being put in a situation where they're getting offers they can't refuse, or there's some sort of urgent reason within the organization to move on from Deshaun Watson. That's my fear. Is it the latter? Because I'm going to tell you right now, the only thing that matters imminently with the Houston Texans, big picture, is this trade. There's nothing that's going on Sundays that matters in terms of the big picture. There are little things going on with this team in these games that matter in terms of the roster construct. Who are some young guys that you can feel good about? And those will all be things we'll talk about at some point here over the next several days and the weeks to come. But in the big picture, the only thing that truly, truly matters as far as the big picture trajectory of the organization is this deal. And I'm terrified that it's veering towards a place where they're going to take 60 cents on the dollar for Deshaun Watson to move on.
And it cannot be mentioned enough. I mean, Caserio is going to get a whole lot of flack for this. I almost feel like no matter what happens, Caserio is going to get less than he probably could have, because in an actual open trading environment, the problem is that no trade clause that Deshaun has, which was negotiated in a contract that was negotiated by Jack Easterby 2 Augusts ago.
Yeah,
that's by far the biggest barrier and obstacle here, is that Deshaun Watson is able to limit this to a market of one. And this is, Sean, this is what makes me skeptical about it, and this is what makes me worry about whatever people from the organization are leaking. It's why would they be leaking stuff right now? Because they're trying to sweeten the pot.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing that makes the most sense. But if they're trying to do that, that also means that Miami's got an offer on the table that the Texans either don't feel good about, or they've messed around and told the Dolphins, like, well, we're going to shop it around and we'll see. There's no guarantee that that offer is going to be there when the Texans get back to the Dolphins. Like, it might be the Dolphins are in a very precarious spot right here. Deshaun Watson is not going to come in and all of a sudden turn that team around into a deep playoff contender this year. They got more issues than just not having a quarterback. So do the Dolphins say, well, okay, wait a second. So we're not going to fix it with just Deshaun, and we're going to trade away like 5 draft picks?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'm not going to say that it's the right decision by the Dolphins, but this is my best case scenario theory on why it might be bubbling up right now with the Dolphins, is that the Dolphins know this season is going down the toilet. And it could be that when the time comes for them to make a trade in the offseason for Deshaun, that there's a lot more competition for Deshaun, and that all of a sudden Miami is not the team that looks like the apple of Deshaun's eye anymore. If the Dolphins finish the year 4-13, and you're Deshaun Watson, and you've had a whole season to think about it, and you've got people getting in your ear saying, hey, look, man, hopefully he has people getting in his ear saying, you might want to look at some of these other teams. And by the time the offseason rolls around, Seth, you're talking about Carolina being in the mix still. Now you're talking about maybe Washington being in the mix, Denver being in the mix. You could talk about teams like Pittsburgh being in the mix if Roethlisberger steps aside. You could talk about a team like Cleveland being in the mix.
Right.
If they move on from Baker Mayfield, the Giants could be there. The Saints could be there. I know those are all teams that have different nightlifes and lifestyles in Miami, which Deshaun seems to really like. But at some point, the quality of the football organization has to play in. And my theory is that the Dolphins may just be trying to preemptively get this done so they don't have to deal with a competitive market in the offseason.
Right, but I guess that's where I just wonder. I always wonder why things are being leaked, and why would the Texans be the side that's leaking them? That's what I don't get or understand. Other than that, they're trying to raise interest. But again, if a good deal was on the table, the kind of deal that you would say, oh yeah, deal's gonna get done, because that's what's being reported, that a deal is going to get done, or that it's very likely to get done. I just, man, sometimes you gotta second guess your sources. Sometimes you gotta, I don't know. I believe that people are being told these things, but think about who is telling you these things.
Yeah,
the people who delivered you Sunday's atrocity are the people who are telling you these things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm pessimistic that a deal is going to get done.
For the sake of content, I hope a deal gets done because it would be fun to talk about. For the sake of what I think is going to yield the best offer for Deshaun Watson, I hope he is still a Texan when Week 10 rolls around and Week 9 rolls around.
Except the big X factor there is, unless, like, what if there is something large looming, like,
yeah,
like the criminal's case
HPD,
is going forward,
yeah,
or something
sure,
like
sure.
that.
No, it's a risk either way. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Back to the Astros. So Framber Valdez and Luis Garcia seem to have figured some things out. We'll talk more about Garcia's performance in the next segment. One of the big questions surrounding this team is what happens with Lance McCullers, who missed the ALCS with a strain in his forearm. It's not believed to be something that's going to hamper him in 2022. Could he be back for the World Series? Here is General Manager James Click on a time frame for a decision on Lance.
I haven't talked to Lance today. I got to talk to the trainers. Once we get a handle on that, we'll have a better idea. But we have a couple days now. We don't have to set the roster until, I think, 10 o'clock on Tuesday. And we're going to take every minute we can just to see how he's responding.
Okay, so here's James Click. And we also have Dusty Baker on Lance McCullers. So a follow-up with James Click is, so where are you at? Have you ruled out Lance McCullers yet?
We're not taking anything off the table. We're going to see how he is. You know, this is the World Series. It's obviously something that I know that Lance wants to be out there if he can. And so we will talk to the doctors and him and the trainers, and we'll figure it out from there.
All right, so James Click, very glib when he gives the answers on Lance McCullers. Here's Dusty Baker in an exchange with Chandler Rome on Lance McCullers' availability for the World Series.
Is McCullers throwing?
No.
So, I mean, it'd be pretty hard for him to pitch in this series.
Yes. You guess it.
So, is he throwing? No. James Click has his, he's not turning his cards around. He's not putting his cards on the hey, we're going to take every minute up till 10 a.m. Chandler Rome asked Dusty Baker. Dusty Baker's like, nope, not throwing.
It's, look, for me, it's just a little gamesmanship there. We're going to keep him guessing. Yeah. I wonder if, what would the decision be? So, what are we looking at if they decide to keep Lance on the roster, even though they're iffy about just how much he can contribute?
I think who's
he displacing?
Then you're probably sitting down Blake Taylor or something like that, right?
Yeah. I almost wonder, just given what the relievers and how important they were, I almost wonder if you swap one injury-concerned guy for another with Zach Greinke, who gave you all of, you know, 2 1/3 innings in this last series.
Yeah, I think, Seth, you got to factor in you're going to be in a National League ballpark for three of these games, and those are going to be games that you're automatically probably going into your bullpen because of pinch hitters and things like that. If Lance hasn't thrown yet, you can't put him on the roster. You just can't.
Well, unless like the normal circumstance would have been, okay, this is the kind of injury you just needs a week of rest, but then you're fresh enough to work your way back into it. I'm just, look, you got an inning in each of the last series out of Zach Greinke. Mm-hmm. So if what you have is a guy that you hope can go 3, 4, or 5 innings, but you're not quite sure about it, I might want to roll my dice with McCullers instead of Greinke in that scenario.
Yeah, we'll see. It's 10 a.m. tomorrow is the drop dead for the roster having to be put in, and this is going to be a little bit different now because you're going to be playing these games in a National League ballpark. I'll be interested to see what the construct is. They went with 13 field players and 13 pitchers in this last series because they knew they were going to have to dig deep into their bullpen. They didn't have a third catcher in this last series, so I think those are all the questions. And how is Jake Myers? Jake Myers was basically – that might be the spot, Seth. Like, Jake Myers occupied a spot on the roster this past series and did nothing because his shoulder was never right. And I guess they could have used him as a pinch runner, but none of these games ever had a score – where you needed a guy as a pinch runner. By the time you would use a guy as a pinch runner in any of these games, one of the teams had opened up a gigantic lead, and you're not finessing the game like that.
And it's actually just the opposite, too, in terms of what do you need in center field, because right now we're trying to figure out how do we feel about Kyle Tucker at center field.
Right, at least in Atlanta, right.
Yeah, because you're trying to get Yordan out there as much as possible. So, Kyle Tucker has played a smattering of center field. He played in the spring this year for a little bit. I think he had one game last year at center field, and then a little bit this during the regular season here. I guess the big, huge question mark would just be, okay, how do you feel about Urquidy, who last time we saw him couldn't throw a strike, you know, in his one appearance in the playoffs. You saw Framber fix whatever he had to fix. You saw Luis Garcia change his foot placement. All of a sudden, he's throwing harder than he ever has. Urquidy is the third one of those dominoes to figure out exactly what do you have in him if he gets whatever he needs fixed right.
Let me make a counterpoint on Urquidy, and you tell me if this is a valid counterpoint. He is the only one of the three young starters in games 1, 2, and 3 that did not get a chance to pitch again in the series post figuring out what the tipping of pitches was. You know, Strom talked about that. After game 3 is when they went in and looked at the video with those three guys. It looked like Framber figured some things out. It looked like Luis Garcia figured some things out, both with maybe tipping pitches and his, you know, his knee placement because of the injury. Urquidy never got a chance to get back out there post them figuring out what the Red Sox might have seen with them. So he might have been a different guy had there been a game 7 and he had an opportunity to get out there. valid?
With Urquidy, though, it's valid, yeah. But I don't think it was a matter of tipping pitches or anything with Urquidy.
Command.
He just wasn't throwing. For a guy that throws a lot of strikes, he wasn't throwing strikes at all. He was way off the plate. So yeah. I guess that just my question still is a little bit of, okay, and then why did they go ahead and replace him in the previous series? It makes me a little bit nervous that there's some kind of health concern there.
Yep. All right, so game one tomorrow night, the games will all be right around 7 o'clock, so there's a consistency with the schedule. I implore all of you, if you're up this early listening to us, get rest. Nap if you need to. Pace yourself, because you got to buckle up. This should be a fun World Series. Astros back in the series for the third time in 5 years. All right, speaking of the Astros, we'll circle back. We will relive every big moment of Game 6 on Friday, and Luis Garcia with a legendary performance. We'll relive that as well. And some of the numbers from Luis Garcia's performance. Brent Strom for president, man. That is next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.